This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice.
Today's reading comes from Exodus chapter 4, verse 19. And the Lord said to Moses in Midian, "Go back to Egypt, for all the men who were seeking your life are dead." Sometimes, before you go back somewhere, you just have to wait for people to die. My name's Ryan, and this is Scripture Read Badly.
And I'm Jeremy, and I am also here. And today we are continuing our adventure through the book of Exodus. Last time we met, we explored the beginnings of Moses' call from God through a big old bush that was on fire.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it wasn't a bush. Maybe it was a robot. Ooh. A fire robot.
That kind of looked like a tree?
Yeah, a tree fire robot.
They were the best words he could use.
A la Futurama.
Allah?
Yeah, it was Allah.
Sorry, yeah.
Or Allah, I don't know where the stress is. We're in chapter 4.
Mm-hmm.
And Moses starts whinging about how strong his own voice is. Oh no, my startup disk is almost full. What does that even mean? Okay, 1 second,
what
please.
What does that mean?
It's really not. It says 1.5 hours. I'm going to risk it. You can cut that. So we have Moses whinging about his voice being too weak, and he asks for some power or some authority or some trickery.
Mm-hmm.
And God ends up giving him the stick that turns into a snake. Now, I have written down in my notes to look up the significance of snake at that time, but I didn't. But I was thinking about it. Even if you did this in Australia, because most of our snakes are quite poisonous, it would freak people out. But we have anti-venom so that you wouldn't necessarily die. But I imagine back in Egypt times, they would not have so many anti-venoms, or they would have freaky cures like cut the wound and suck the thing out. So would it be even more freaky back then that a guy throws his stick down and it turns into a snake?
Potentially. I mean, as far as danger goes, probably. It does also depend what type of snake it was.
True.
Because if it was a non-venomous one, then people wouldn't be that freaked out.
Yeah.
I'm just now attempting to have my internet load Google.
Ooh.
So that I can
I've heard of that
look
site.
Up, so I can look up the snake god of Egypt.
Yeah, because then all of the plagues, are there snake, is there a snake plague?
There is not a snake plague.
That would have been freaky. But anyway, so God gives him this, while you look that up, God gives him this trick to throw a stick down and it turns into a snake, and then Moses himself freaks out about it, and God calmly suggests that he just picks it up by the tail and it turns back into a stick.
I wonder if the snake would have actually turned around and tried to bite him, or if it wouldn't have, and picking it up by the tail was easy.
Yeah.
You know, because we often see in different depictions of this story that Moses just bends down and picks up the tail,
yep,
and then boom, it's a staff again. But I wonder if it was like a cobra and tried to bite him. I think that could have been pretty intense.
That would be very
intense.
So then
he would have had to trust that God would have protected him. But I'm looking now at the god Apep.
Ooh, Apep.
Or Apep. A-P-E-P. Or Apophis.
Or Arare, if it's
Greek equivalent.
Russian.
Yeah. And he was the ancient Egyptian deity who embodied chaos.
Ooh, hello.
And was thus the opponent of light and Ma'at, or order and truth. He appears as a giant serpent in art. And I wonder, so he was the opponent of Ra, I think. That's what it looks like.
Who was the big old god, right?
He was the sun god, and he was the god of the gods. So, let's see. So he fought against Ra and was defeated.
So it's literally their version of Lucifer.
Yes, yes. So he is essentially part of the underworld.
Okay.
And I think that kind of makes sense because in ancient Egyptian mythology, Ra, like we said, was the top dog. He was the sun god, the one above all the all the others, and he was kind of embodied by the sun. So I think having the serpent as a sign in the Egyptian court was God's way of challenging their paradigm, their worldview, maybe.
Yeah, that's solid.
Hey, you remember the story about how Apep took on Ra, but then lost? Well, this is me essentially using the serpent to signify the challenger of Ra, but this time we're going to win. So maybe it had something to do with that.
That's cool.
But we're not theologians or historians or anything.
Oh, but we discussed last time that we may be theologians, but we're definitely not historians. But then what's a historian if not someone who reads history? And I've done that. So maybe we are even just historians. Now. Yeah, on Google.
I have a question, though.
Yep.
What is somebody that studies mythology? Is that a mythologist?
Yeah, because he's not a historian because it's not real. Maybe a culturist?
Just looking at the makeup of the word, you consider somebody that studies biology, they're a biologist. So somebody that studies mythology must be a mythologist. It's just not a word that I'm used to hearing.
Definitely not either me. Mythologist.
Did you ever play Age of Mythology?
No, I've heard that somewhere. Is that like Age of Empires, except different?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. So it was the mythological edition of Age of Empires. And my family was very into Age of Empires. We knew all the cheat codes and we used to win every single time, probably because of it. Occasionally I would try without any of the cheats, but I'd still use No Fog and Reveal Map because that made it easier.
Yeah, yeah.
But we loved it so much that when Age of Mythology came out, I spent, I think, $25 on getting Age of Mythology. But we used these old Windows 98 and Windows 99 computers.
Yeah.
And the video card wasn't good enough.
Oh,
it just wasn't good enough to run this because it was made for Windows XP.
Classic. And
it was pretty devastating to us because we were so looking forward to playing Age of Mythology and using centaurs and minotaurs to take on all these other people. And then the game actually finished installing and we opened it up and the buildings were there, but all of the characters were invisible.
What?
And it was insane. It was insane. I was so upset that I don't even think that we took it back. I think we just held on to it in hopes that one day we'd have computers that could run it. And then eventually we got rid of it at a garage sale or something like that. So that's my experience with mythology, other than reading about Apep right now. So I would not consider myself
a mythologist
in any regard to be a mythologist.
Fair enough. Yeah, I don't think I'm a mythologist either. So that should be our new tagline. Possibly historians, possibly theologians, but definitely not mythologists.
Nope.
Or biologists.
Nope. No. Although I did study biology in high school, so does that make me a biologist?
Yeah, okay. Half Maybe of I'm us a... is a biologist.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're getting into all our gists and things, but to get back to the gist of this...
He threw it on the ground!
He did. He threw it on the ground!
He threw the whole cake too, just for fun.
Yeah. I wonder what this must have been like, because God asked him, "What's that in your hand?" Knowing full well what it is, but he wants Moses to identify it. It's a staff. And then God says, "Throw it on the ground." And then he threw it on the ground and it became a serpent. Maybe God wanted him to say that it was a staff so that he didn't suddenly have this weird moment of insanity where he questioned whether or not he was holding a serpent the whole time.
Oh, true. Ooh, hello. Yep.
So I don't know. I don't know if he was trying to prove to Moses that he could change the state of something.
Yep.
And I think that's something interesting to consider because there are a few different times throughout the Bible where God makes it seem like there is a giant army outside of a camp,
yeah,
or something like that, or a giant soldier that's destroying everyone. But I don't know of any other times where God physically changes the matter of something into a different substance other than this. And I mean, other than the plagues, of course, with the blood and everything. But yeah, this seems to be a fairly unique instance. What do you think?
Yes, but I like that you, what you say about him needing to know that wasn't a snake isn't in his hand, because the magicians in the Pharaoh's courts may have had just a little trick up their sleeve where they were holding snakes. And then that would have made Abraham, oh no, we're talking about Moses, question if it was a snake or not, because then they would have done it as well.
Yeah.
And maybe he would have questioned everything else God led him into, but because he knew it was a stick, he knew. And then the next thing God tells him is to put his hand in his cloak, and it brings out his leprosy. And back then, leprosy was seen as a very contagious, very ostracizing disease. And so I suppose that's the next step, because then magicians can't necessarily do that. And it's another freaky thing, like... Snakes are quite freakish and terrifying, and then this disease that ostracizes you from society is also kind of freakish, but God's using them to be like, I have power over life and disease.
Yeah, so it's trying to instill fear in the Egyptians, perhaps, trying to make them feel uncomfortable at the very least.
Yeah, or even looking back at that snake thing that you were talking about, that God is fighting darkness and he's going to win this time. I don't know.
Right. So I just have this funny little mental picture of Moses being in Pharaoh's court and putting his hand inside his coat and then bringing it back out and saying, hey buddy, you want to buy some leprosy?
And Pharaoh just freaks out.
Yeah, I mean, I would freak out if somebody did that in front of me.
Yeah.
However, these days, that does seem like the type of magic act that you would see on Australia's Got Talent or whatever. So, I don't really know if that would work today.
Yeah.
And I think that's important to know, because these particular signs were very specific to this moment.
Yeah.
To this point in history. Slash point in mythology, question mark? I don't know. But we have then God doing something that is a foreshadowing of the very first plague.
Yep.
Where he says, I want you to pour some water from the Nile on dry ground, and it will become blood on the dry ground if these other two signs don't work. Now, I don't really know how that fits into the way I remember the story.
Yeah.
Because I usually only remember the snake and the staff thing.
Yeah.
I think primarily because of the Prince of Egypt, and that's kind of my mental picture go-to, other than that weird buying leprosy thing that I just said. But
yeah, what's that from? Or did you make it up?
I remember... from the movie Robots, where this robot has a cloak and says, want to buy a watch? And then they say, don't buy us, we're fakes. I don't know, but it's neither here nor there. Yeah. So then it's just interesting that God says, if they don't listen to these first two signs. But then who is he talking to here? Is he talking about Pharaoh being in the Pharaoh's court? Or is he talking about being in front of the elders of Israel?
I think he's already talked to the...
Oh, true. Because saying I am would be a sign enough for them.
Okay. Or at least later in the chapter somewhere, he goes and talks to the elders and there's no miracles there. He just talks about true. Them.
True. Yeah. Okay. So maybe the fact that he comes back is enough of a stirring.
Yep.
And then when he says, this is the name of Jehovah or Yahweh, this is I am, then they say, all right, he knows what he's doing.
Yep.
We're going to follow this guy. Fair enough. Okay. So then Moses says, I am not eloquent either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and of tongue.
Yeah, maybe
God...
How do
you interpret that?
I think he's just... Well, he's either a realist in that he is those things, and he thinks sending him to Pharaoh will discount God's message, so he wants God's message to be good, or he's just gutless and he doesn't want to do it. And then I wonder if it's something he learnt, because then he has to do it for the rest of his life. Like, he's the spokesperson of God to the people until he dies, whatever, 80 years later. Or 40 years later.
It says in my ESV study Bible that him saying that he's not slow of speech, that he's slow of speech and tongue, is in reference to the people that are supposed to address Pharaoh in court being very proud about their considerable powers of speech and possibly even persuasion. So maybe he's thinking, I'm just a normal guy. I'm not the type of guy that would willingly stand up in front of people and give a speech.
And he is the most humble person.
Yeah, there is...
Which is written later in the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely part of it. But then... I don't know. See, I'm picturing now, instead of Moses having a lisp or a stutter or whatever people have said throughout history of justifying what he says here, I'm thinking more along the lines of him just not being comfortable with public speaking.
Yeah.
Because it isn't just going to one single authority and talking to them, which even people that are uncomfortable with public speaking can do in a pinch, but it's more like him standing in front of an entire court of attendants and Pharaoh and all these scribes and everyone. So it is like making a speech. So maybe he's just a normal guy. We all know people in school that were not comfortable making speeches, but in everyday conversation they were really good.
Yeah.
Or when they were talking about something that they were particularly passionate about, they would be very eloquent and make sure they got the point across.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's kind of where I'm approaching it this time. That I differ from how I've grown up perceiving it.
Yeah.
And then God responds to him saying, "Who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord?" What are the implications of that statement, that question? That God makes people deaf and mute and blind, or heaps, allows them to speak.
Heaps of implications.
Mm-hmm.
That everything is determined by God and we don't get a choice, and so we just roll with the punches. Or the implication could be that he made Moses the way he made him, and that's why he called him and chose him, so he shouldn't whinge about being something he doesn't think he is. The implications that God made everything and everything is determined by him is also explored through the rest of this book because of the miracles and the plagues.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that God gets to mess with whatever he wants to mess with.
Mm-hmm. So we are kind of coming back to the same things that we were talking about in Job, where we were saying, did God cause this to happen, or did it just naturally occur and then God kind of got the blame for it because he created things in the first place? I think I agree with you that this is God saying, I've made up my mind and you have no grounds to question me, essentially.
Yep.
So, yes, and I agree. It's also God saying, I chose you for a reason.
Yeah.
So then Moses says, "Oh my Lord, please send someone else." So even after having the reassurance of God, Moses still refuses the call.
Yeah.
So I'm sure we see this elsewhere. I mean, in everyday life today, where people don't do what God wants them to do, and perhaps there aren't as significant consequences, but I'm sure that there are people that God has called to go into ministry or become a missionary or do something that they're uncomfortable with, that they flat out refuse. But instead of allowing God to work through them despite their weaknesses, they just don't ever go down that path.
Yeah. Either because they don't know it, that it exists, or because they've just run from it. But then you wonder if Moses had just been like, sweet, I'm going to do it, if God would have said Aaron anyway, because he sends us in teams, not just by ourselves.
Yeah.
And if it was a check on his life, like, are you willing to do this even though you yourself think you're too weak to do it? Or if he was even expecting, or did God respond to Moses' misgivings by sending Aaron? I feel like in my life there's been moments where I'm like, I don't really want to do this, and God has responded to that with encouragement through other people. And so I wonder if this is that, like, God was hoping that Moses would be like, yeah, I'm gonna do it, yeah, but then when he didn't, God was like, all right, to get him into the places I need him to go, I'll send Aaron with him.
Yeah, all right, as a reinforcement as well as a spokesman. Something that it doesn't necessarily trouble me, but sometimes it makes me a little bit confused when, say, in an environment like YWAM, where you have visiting speakers coming through all the time, or people that get up and share on a particular topic, oftentimes you'll hear people say things like, I used to be deathly afraid of public speaking, but then God told me that I need to speak in front of people, or I need to teach, and then that he was able to help me overcome that fear.
Yeah.
So I know that I've been called to this because I was so, in myself, I was opposed to the call.
Yeah.
But then what confuses me is that you very, very rarely hear people that naturally have the gift of public speaking saying things like that in front of people.
Yeah.
They rarely get up there and say, God gave me a passion for public speaking when I was little, and I've always been very good at it, and now I want to use it for God's glory.
Yeah.
It's not very often that you hear things like that. It's usually the God worked through my weakness type of thing, as opposed to God championed my own strength.
In your
maybe
life...
Maybe it's just that I didn't hear many people.
Oh, I don't think I've like heard... That. Oh, no, I have heard that. I've heard someone like Fiona Gifford, who is like, she thinks teaching is a service, and God has called her to serve the masses with her teaching gift. But have you ever thought that in yourself, like, I'm good at this and God's using this strength?
Yeah, I think why I get confused, and I think you've really you've hit the nail on the head here. I don't feel uncomfortable in public speaking.
Yeah.
Especially when I know what I'm talking about. I think it's hard when you get up there and you're floundering around a topic that you've only researched for a couple of days. But when it's something that I'm passionate about, or a story that I have to tell, I can tell it in front of people, and even in front of a microphone, obviously. But I think that in the past I've been confused as to whether or not God would use me because I don't feel uncomfortable in front of people.
Yep.
So there's definitely ways that God will work through people that feel comfortable talking in a public setting.
Yep.
There's definitely ways that God will use them, if it's on radio, on podcasts, or actually preaching or teaching or whatever. But then I think getting up in front of people and speaking in a public setting isn't necessarily where I feel that God wants me to go.
Yeah.
So part of me kind of wonders why I have been equipped in that way. Maybe there's some particular instance somewhere in my life that it will be very important that I'm eloquent and articulate in front of a large group of people that I perhaps don't even know.
Yep.
So in the case of Moses, if he... Maybe Aaron was somebody that was articulate in front of people and could easily go toe-to-toe with the eloquence of Pharaoh's court. Maybe that's why God chose him, or maybe God was working through his weakness as well. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I could see that. And back to what you were saying before about... my mind just forgot what you said. But what if he... Oh, man, my brain just stopped. But what if Moses was good at speaking to groups but not good at speaking to pharaohs? So what you were saying before about he was humble and he didn't want to push himself forward... So maybe his skill set was great with public speaking, like he did later on in the book, but he just wanted Aaron because Aaron was good with speaking to power. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and the fact that Aaron gets such a position of power later on seems to imply that he has a natural gift in that kind of area.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's just that. Maybe it's because Moses has been out of Pharaoh's court for 40 years. He doesn't feel confident going back into that kind of way of speaking, or even speaking that language, perhaps, if the Midianites spoke a different language. So maybe he was thinking, because my mind is now speaking in this, whatever it was, Hebrew dialect that the Midianites spoke, because I don't speak Egyptian anywhere near as fluently as I used to, maybe it will take me longer to translate things in my head, and then it will just become a liability.
Mm-hmm.
But Aaron, having still been in Egypt for the last 40 years, won't have that problem, and he could easily act as either an interpreter sometimes or something else.
That is sweet. All right. And I've seen that a lot here with English-speaking pastors who refuse to preach in Lithuanian because it's not up to scratch to speak of spiritual things, even though they're conversationally fluent. So that makes heaps of sense.
Wow. Yep. I understand that. Yeah. Okay. Great. So then God says, after God gets angry at him, and it does kind of make sense that he would, because God is saying, come on, I actually chose you. Yep. Why are you refusing the call? God says, is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? Obviously, we remember that Moses is a Levite too. I know that he can speak well. So God says, I know that he can speak well.
Yep.
Then we find out that Aaron is actually coming out to meet with Moses.
Ooh, reunited and it's understood. Just like that.
Yeah. So I don't... does it actually say when Aaron meets up with Moses, does Aaron say... Ah, okay. Interesting. So we'll find out in verse 27 that God actually says to Aaron, go into the wilderness to meet Moses.
Damn.
So I don't know if that is happening at exactly the same point in time that God is saying, when you leave, Aaron will come out to meet you. Or maybe he's saying, after I have this encounter with you, I'm going to pop over there, and then I'll have that encounter with Aaron, and then the time difference will allow for you two to meet up in the wilderness.
I expect it was on the same time zone, though. Mm-hmm. But God is omniscient. God. No, omnipresent. Mm-hmm. So he could have done it multiple different things, or he could have just sent an angel.
Yep. He is also omniscient, so you were right there, too.
Omniscient.
Omnibus. So then God said, you will speak to him and put the words in his mouth. So I guess Moses is going to tell him this entire encounter with God and what God wants them to say to Pharaoh.
Yep. Yep, that sounds right.
Yep. And then Aaron will speak for Moses to the people, meaning the Israelites, and he shall be Moses' mouth, and Moses will be as God to him. as in Moses will be the mouthpiece of God to Aaron, and Aaron will be the mouthpiece of Moses to the people.
Yeah, so I wonder if it is just a translation interpreter kind of situation.
Perhaps. Or maybe Moses was also thinking, I don't have favor in either of those camps because I killed an Egyptian, so I became an outlaw.
A pariah.
Yeah, and the Hebrews, kind of like what we addressed in a previous episode, he didn't feel like he belonged anywhere. Yep. So going back to the Israelites, he may feel out of his depth because people just know him as the one that grew up in Pharaoh's court.
Yeah, the classic third culture kid situation.
Mm-hmm.
He should read some books.
Yeah. So maybe it was that he felt more comfortable with Aaron advocating for him in front of his own people as well as in front of the Egyptians.
Yeah, sweet.
So, all right, I like that. So then Moses went back to Jethro, his father-in-law, but we also remember that his name was Reuel. I think it was Reuel. Where did we find that? We talked about that. Yes, I think it was, Reuel. It's in chapter 2, verse 18. Yeah. So he goes back to Jethro, and he says, "Please let me go back to my brothers in Egypt." My brothers in Egypt. So he's there identifying with the Hebrews to see whether they are still alive.
Whoa, I wonder if he legitimately thought they could be dead.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. I mean, if you consider that the workload that they were under was pretty crazy at that time that he left,
yeah,
it would make sense that another 40 years of that could very well dwindle down the numbers of the Israelites considerably.
Definitely.
So maybe he was genuinely concerned for their safety.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. Moses then gets the go-ahead from Jethro, and he says, "Go in peace," which I suppose is probably shalom, although I don't speak Hebrew. If you do, you can correct me on that on social media. I don't care. And the Lord said to Moses in Midian, "Go back to Egypt, for all the men who are seeking your life are dead." Remember that verse from the beginning of the episode?
I do.
Moses took his wife Zipporah and his sons and had them ride on a donkey, and he went back to the land of Egypt. And Moses took the staff of God in his hand.
Ooh, the staff of God. So the actual staff was special.
Hmm.
When he pulled the snake up, maybe it transformed into a different kind of staff.
Yeah, it was just a shepherd's staff, but now it's the staff of God. Interesting. Yeah. Okay, but Aaron also has a staff that becomes significant because God makes it bud.
Oh, yeah.
Flowers and things. So I wonder if
we should all start carrying around staffs more often.
Maybe we should. Or at the very least, having our own personal staff, meaning attendants and secretaries and things.
That's true. They could be special.
Yeah, maybe they are the staff of God, meaning maybe the pastors could and the priests.
Turn into a snake.
Maybe you are one of the staff of God.
Ooh, yeah, take that, non-staff members.
All right. Then the Lord said to Moses, "When you go back to Egypt, see that you do before Pharaoh all the miracles that I have put in your power." So he said all the miracles, and that would mean the water of the Nile turning into blood.
Yep.
Though I don't recall that actually happening in Pharaoh's court, just as the first of the plagues. So that's a little bit interesting, I suppose.
As in, are you referencing do before Pharaoh, as in that's only in his court?
Yeah, that's kind of how I read this, though. Okay. I make an exception with that one because I know it happens in the whole of Egypt and the Nile turns to blood, except in Gershon and those things. But then God says something interesting when he says, "I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will not let the people go." What do you think of this? Because this has been a contentious issue throughout many, many generations. Does God harden people's hearts so that they refuse things?
I once heard Peter Warren talk about how God will never take away our ultimate choice to choose God. But he will. He is powerful enough that he allows, or he takes his own power and freedom to influence some of our choices, but he never influences that ultimate choice to choose him. So either this is referencing Pharaoh.
So that seems like a semi-Calvinist perspective.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Okay.
But, and I think I'll argue both sides. So this could reference the idea that Pharaoh had not chosen God, and God knew that he would not, and that's a very Calvinist perspective. And so then he took ownership over parts of Pharaoh's life so that ultimately Pharaoh would let the people go. Or it could reference the idea that from Moses and the scribes of this book's perspective, God influenced Pharaoh in such a way that it was miraculous in their eyes that he let them go. So it must have been a hardening of the heart. Otherwise, he wouldn't have chosen that.
Right. So if God hadn't hardened the heart of Pharaoh all the times leading up to the final plague, then they wouldn't have had the Passover. They wouldn't have plundered the Egyptians. I guess the tale that was told of them leaving Egypt wouldn't have been as grand to the surrounding peoples when they were doing the conquest of Canaan and things. So maybe it was that God's ultimate plan was that Pharaoh would let them go, but he didn't want them to go until certain things had come to pass. Is that what you're getting at?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well,
but like when you look at the rest of scripture, God doesn't often do this, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are a few circumstances where God influences the will of someone, but for the most part, it seems as though it's their own decision that God uses, I guess.
Yep.
So, yeah, God's poised and ready to go, and then as soon as they make the decision in their heart, he allows things to unfold.
Yep.
I wonder if it's kind of like a Jedi mind trick where it works on the weak-minded, but it's not telling people to do something that they don't want to do. It's appealing to the very small... And I've read books. I've read Star Wars books.
I've read books.
Currently reading a Star Wars book, so I'm quite familiar with the intricacies of this concept of the Jedi mind trick where you influence a very, even sometimes very small parts of the will of a person.
Yep.
You appeal to parts that are there, even if they're very small, that they want to do certain things. So in the case of the, in A New Hope, when Obi-Wan says, "These are not the droids you're looking for, move along," that thing.
Yep.
He's appealing to the part of the stormtrooper where the stormtrooper doesn't want them to be the droids that he's looking for because he's hot and he's tired and he wants the day to end. He doesn't want to have to deal with this situation now.
Yep.
So then that's kind of what tricks him into things. But I don't know. Maybe Pharaoh is weak-minded, or maybe it is that God refused to allow him to come to the decision to let them go fully until certain things are coming to pass. So that was just a random Star Wars Does the Bible digression. Sorry
but I've never thought about it like that, because if Pharaoh is arrogant and powerful, I can't imagine it would be hard to convince him to be stubborn.
Right.
Like, if he's already on the verge and God just whispers to him, like, why don't you think about this? Because it's similar with the other way. Like, if we're so in love with God and we want to do his will, it wouldn't take him much effort to guide us to do his will.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
Mm-hmm. Jedi mind tricks. Straight from the Bible.
Yep, come on. Alright, so then we're around verse 22, if you're following along at home. Something around there. And God instructs Moses to say to Pharaoh, and I guess through Aaron, that Israel is his firstborn son. And we know that is not true because Adam was his firstborn son.
Or Jesus was.
Jesus? Question mark?
So, thirdborn son, thank you.
Thirdborn.
Exodus.
Even though we had the forefathers before Israel, but obviously he's focusing in on, these are my chosen people. So not going to get hung up on that because that was silly. Okay, so then God's reason for them to be let go out of Egypt is that they may serve him. So does that mean being in Egypt is preventing them from serving him because of the slavery and the circumstances they're in?
Maybe, but ultimately the serving of him would be to go to the promised land and set up a kingdom forever. And they can't do that whilst being in Egypt, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, and we do know that the Israelites settled because of Joseph and his influence. They settled in the Goshen Valley or whatever it was, and it was the choicest part of the land, and they were comfortable there. And that's the reason they stayed in Egypt, even though the famine that they originally went there to avoid was only 7 years long. So maybe it's God saying, if you guys aren't going to go back to Canaan like I want you to, then I'm going to make something happen so that you have to leave.
Yep.
I'm going to intervene because you've seen how this ends up with you refusing to pack your bags and go. You've ended up being enslaved. So,
which he repeats a few times in history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Now, it's interesting that God says, if Pharaoh refuses to let Israel go, behold, he will kill Pharaoh's firstborn son. So it's God as Yahweh, or rather Yahweh as a God, saying, Israel's my firstborn son. I'm directly challenging Pharaoh, who is seen as a god, and if you refuse to agree to my the proposition that I'm putting before you, I will kill your firstborn son. Now, obviously, there's a difference here, knowing that Israel is an entire people, and the firstborn son of Pharaoh was just that. It was his physical firstborn son. Although the firstborn son of all Egyptians is kind of what comes to pass. So,
which is a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. But if we want to look at it as Egypt being the son of Pharaoh, Egypt as a nation, then ultimately Pharaoh doesn't let them go until God has obliterated their livestock and their crops and everything, and essentially killed Egypt. And it takes them quite a long time to rebuild. So maybe it is that God is saying, if you don't let my nation go, I'm going to kill your nation.
Yep.
Hmm.
And gives them the choice, arguably.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the fact that Pharaoh gets to choose it for them collectively is also because the people worship Pharaoh, so they're giving him the choice to choose on behalf of everyone.
Hmm. Yeah.
So it's not like super unjust, although it is sad that lots of people die. They chose to worship a non-god, and that god chose its people's death.
Yeah. Right, yeah, because the terms were said right up front. This is what's going to happen if you refuse. And because Pharaoh refused, there were devastating consequences.
Yep.
And, yeah, that's crazy. So he did choose the death of Egypt over the freedom of Israel. Wow.
And you
in
wonder,
the end, both happened.
Yeah, and you wonder how many Egyptians left with the Jews or the Hebrews when they left.
Yeah, I do
Is
wonder that,
that
actually.
Recorded?
I don't,
because then,
I don't know.
Historically, that happened all the time. Like, there are always regulations for aliens that joined the nation of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So you wonder how many of them.
We read later, and we'll get to this once we probably get to the book of Joshua or something. But when we are looking more at the person of Caleb, we do find that he is not of Hebrew descent. So that kind of makes us wonder where he came into the story. Was he...
He's probably Australian.
Probably. Was he grafted into the nation of Israel in Egypt? Or was it once they left Egypt? Was it 40 years before the plagues? Was it during the plagues? Like it is
Did
in
he just
Quith
turn
Graham's
up?
Book. Yeah, exactly. Did he just show up and become one of the spies? Because he's like, I know this land. Maybe he was a Canaanite. I don't know. But he probably wasn't. But I have a question about verses 24 through 26 of chapter 4. And we're aware that we are rounding the bend, coming around the final corner for the chapter here. But it says, at a lodging place on the way, the Lord met him and sought to put him to death. Then Zipporah took a flint and cut off her son's foreskin and touched Moses' feet with it and said, surely you are a bridegroom of blood to me. So he let him alone. It was then that she said, a bridegroom of blood, because of the circumcision.
Which we discussed is one of the greatest hardcore metal album names / band names.
Bridegroom of Blood, yes.
Track one, because of the circumcision.
Yeah. This is pretty intense. And it shows that God takes the covenant of circumcision very serious, even 480 years after they moved to Egypt.
Yeah.
So this is not part of the story that's usually incorporated into Sunday school tellings.
Yeah, it's not a part of the Prince of Egypt.
No.
Disney did not animate this part.
Disney did not animate Prince of Egypt anyway. It was DreamWorks.
DreamWorks is Disney, or is that Pixar?
Pixar, yeah.
Same. But that means that Moses would have talked about God's promises and principles enough that she understood that when God or the angel of God, whoever went, she was like, oh, this is what he's here for. I have to circumcise my son right now.
Yeah. That also makes me wonder what the stance was in Midian on circumcision.
Oh, true.
Whether his father-in-law Jethro, the priest, preached it or not. Because it doesn't seem like Moses' sons were circumcised.
Yeah, which is odd too. And it doesn't say how old they are, but...
Well, we can assume that they are
in their 20s, 30s.
Probably young adults, because he arrived there 40 years ago, got married shortly thereafter probably, and so they could be in their mid to late 30s even. So
And their mum just walks in and circumcises him.
Yeah,
classic mum.
Yep, not knowing boundaries. Yep, classic. Nope. Wow, that's pretty intense. Would not want that to happen to me.
Nope. And then just throws it at the husband.
Yeah. Look at what you've done to me. You're a bridegroom
of
blood.
Look what you made me do.
Maybe she was the lead screamer in Bridegroom of Blood.
That's true. That's the opening track, so I wonder what the rest of the album's like.
It's pretty intense. So then the Lord prompts Aaron to go into the wilderness to meet Moses. It's cool because we do kind of see Jesus in this, in that Jesus was prompted by the Holy Spirit to go into the wilderness to spend time with God. So here we have somebody being called out of what they were used to in Egypt, going out into the wilderness to have their life changed and ultimately bring about deliverance of a people. So, I mean, it was primarily Moses being in the wilderness for 40 years that was the representation. But even here we have a smaller version of that with Aaron going out to meet with Moses and have his own life changed. Because he doesn't know that he is destined to be the priest over all of Israel.
Nope.
So that's pretty cool that God appears to Aaron. And I'm sure that would have woken him up a little bit. So it says that he went and met Moses at the mountain of God, which we assume was Mount Sinai, where Moses had this encounter on with the burning bush.
Yeah.
So Moses didn't go out to meet him halfway. Or he did. He was at a lodging place on the way. I don't know. I don't know how far away Sinai was from where they lived.
Yeah.
I'm not a geographist.
Whoa. I'm kind of like a geographist. I love it. Is that included?
Hello, I lost you.
Hello?
Sorry, are you back? I lost you for a second.
Am I back?
Can you hear me?
Hello.
Yeah, I can hear you now. I think that'll just be funny for the listeners because they'll hear the raw audio on both of our ends. It'll be you saying something and then me saying, hello, are you gone?
Hello, Are you there? Where are you? Excuse me.
All right.
What did you say last?
I was saying that I wasn't a geographist.
And then I said, I'm kind of like a geographist. I love it. That counts, right?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure geographist is it's a new word. I think it was.
Most definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so then... Anyway, let's wrap this up. So Moses talks to Aaron, tells him everything that happened, and probably catch up on the last 40 years and find out what the situation's like in Egypt. Because they wouldn't have had much to do with each other after Moses was whatever he was when he went to live with Pharaoh, 8 years old or something.
So when God called him, it would have been kind of strange.
Yeah. He would have said, remember your brother who grew up in Pharaoh's court that you didn't have much to do with, and then he ran away because he killed someone? Yeah, well, he's going to come back.
He's on a mountain.
Yeah, he's on a mountain. Go
you have
him.
To go see him.
Yeah. That's basically it. So...
Yep.
Moses and Aaron gather with all the elders of the people of Israel, and Aaron spoke all the words that the Lord had spoken to Moses and did the signs. Whoa, hang on. And Aaron did the signs? Is that what it says? And did the signs in the sight of the people. So I think it says that, Moses showed Aaron the signs of the Lord. So I guess Aaron was able to do them from then on too. That's pretty cool.
Cool.
And the people believed. So it does say that they did the signs. So maybe they did do the blood, the water turning into blood in the sight of the people of Israel. So,
or maybe they only had to do the stick in the snake and they believed him so he didn't have to do the rest. Because it seemed like it was like, if they don't believe the stick, then get your leprosy out. And if they don't believe the leprosy, then do the blood.
Yep. Yep. I think that makes sense. That's cool.
Yep.
When they heard that the Lord had visited the people of Israel and that they that he had seen their affliction, they bowed their heads and worshipped. And I just think it's so beautiful whenever you read that somebody that is under such oppression and in such difficult circumstances bows their heads and worship. Like with Job doing whatever he did, scraping himself with a broken potsherd and covering himself with ashes or throwing them to heaven and worshipping, something like that. So this is where things begin to pick up for the Israelites after however many years it was since they, since the OG bad Pharaoh kind of did some terrible stuff to them and there was the genocide of the boys. This is probably...
That's track two, genocide of the boys.
Or genocides are for the boys. Nope, that's not good.
No, that's not great.
Saturdays, that's what it is. Great, so this is the end of chapter 4. We will resume with chapter 5 in the next episode in a few days' time. You can find us on all the social medias. That's a good way to keep up with us. And also, you can review us and rate us on iTunes. That's cool. Tell someone about it. You can find both
Yeah, please tell someone about it.
Yeah. That's probably the best way to get the word out. It, even though we can spend a bunch of money on sponsoring posts on Facebook and things, it still remains the best way as word of mouth. And if you in any way are getting something out of this, or it's making you think or challenging your perspective, or if you disagree with us flat out, then you can let us know. Email us, scriptureadbadly@gmail.com, or... send out an angry tirade of tweets or something at us online.
That's sounds brilliant. Or just, we have a Pinterest?
Do we?
I don't know. Do we have a Pinstagram?
We have an Instagram. I didn't make a Pinterest.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's not.
Yep.
I don't know anyone who still uses it.
If you want to use Pinterest and make an account, a fake account of us, then make sure you say fake Scripture Red Bally. That would be awesome.
That's true. Or just go to mine, because it's the greatest one in the universe.
Yeah, it probably is.
You can find my other writing at don'teattrash.com. Don'teattrash.com.
And mine is at anotherunnecessaryblog.wordpress.com. It's been a while since I've written there, but you might get some good stuff out of it. I even have...
There's some good back stuff.
Yeah, I even have a... My very first post there was things that I wish I knew before starting a podcast. So if that in any way interests you, then check that out. It might be helpful.
Oh, should I read that? Hang on, I think I have read it. It was good.
Yeah, thanks. We've started doing pictures with our episodes too, if you haven't noticed, and they are done by Jeremy. He's drawn them up and made them look all pretty. There was no story time this week.
I need some glitter. I should find some glitter.
Yes, that would definitely
Yeah, what story time? Tell us about that.
It's too late for that now because we're already running late with this episode, but story time's where I put the music and the sound effects in underneath things, and it's lots of fun. So, yep. That might come into play next week when you're in Pharaoh's court. We'll see. But for now, remember to do things that benefit you and benefit other people, but most of all, benefit the Lord. That's what we're
the
about.
The Lord.
Here. The Lord. I love puppies and serving the Lord. Okay, that's it. Thanks, everyone. See you next time.
See you later, champs.